Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Esports Boom, your weekly esports business podcast. A lot of things happened this week in esports. We saw FaZe raise $40 million. We saw BMW racing into esports. We saw the Nevada sportsbooks accepting esports bets, and a lot more. We got a great guest. We got Mo Haliba, he's the COO over at Stats Helix, a company that's revolutionizing the way streams work and the way we consume digital media. So really excited for this episode and for all of you to hear Mo's stories and his hot takes on the industry. So without further ado, let's get right into it. So Mo, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back on here.
I'm really happy to have you on, man, and congrats on your new role at Stats Helix.
Thank you. It's a promotion in title, let's say.
Well, I know you work really hard regardless, so I'm really happy to have you on and excited to kind of reintroduce Stats Helix and where you are right now to our listeners as well. But we'll get into that in the second part of the podcast. For new listeners, the first half of the podcast generally is a general discussion about this week's biggest esports stories. We then give our takes. We go over why these stories are relevant and what the effect could be on esports in general. And the second part of the episode is a deep dive into our guest, in this case Mo, his background, some of the work that he's doing with Stats Helix. So let's get right into it.
Sure.
Our first story of the day is a major raise right in the middle of COVID, so obviously a really positive announcement. FaZe Clan raised $40 million in their star-studded Series A. This was first reported by Adam Fitch of Esports Insider. So North American esports organization FaZe Clan has released details on its Series A funding round, in which it raised $40 million. What's really interesting is the list of people who contributed. It's a who is who in entertainment. So think about Pitbull, Sway Lee, Yo Gotti, DJ Paul, Ray J, Disco Fries, and Offset as far as musicians. Sports figures include Naya Houston, Myers Leonard, Gregory van der Veel, Proud Dutchman, Josh Hart, and Jamal Murray. So my main question to you first is, like, obviously you're aware of what FaZe Clan is. What do you think, what does this mean for FaZe? How would this affect their business as a whole?
A lot of these teams for a while have been raising money, and then one of the issues, I think, is that none of them really had a way to monetize at the level needed to be able to make returns at the valuations that they were raising at. And so This is a very necessary step in that direction, because you're adding real star power and you're adding reach and you're adding new monetization methods to the team's personalities. The people they have on board now can play games and they have their fans and stuff. They can also drop merch and, you know, collabs with famous artists and people that people care about. And so it gives them a way to start ramping up monetization.
Absolutely. One of the things I forgot to mention just for the audience, that the round was led by Jimmy Iovine, who is known obviously from his, you know, he was the creator of Beats together with Dr. Dre. And he's really a legend in the music world, and Network, which is the big kind of social shopping app. So I completely agree with you. It's obviously interesting to see them go that route where they, you know, have a whole bunch of celebrities on board rather than, you know, big institutional investors like they've done in the past. Mm-hmm. One of the things I like to say in general, or like one of the things that we have seen, is FaZe is an esports organization in name. Right, in name they're an esports organization, but in reality, like, they're a content powerhouse. They're a lifestyle brand. Their esports part is very, very small in the broader sense of what they do. And in that part, like, when you look at kind of the esports ecosystem, you have kind of two philosophies, right? You have the "We Are Sports 2.0" philosophy, where they take a lot of what's good about traditional sports and try to do it better in esports. And then you have the esports as a vertical to content / lifestyle, so it's brand vertical, which is like, we don't even care about how we perform in our games. Like, we care about building social relevance and growing. And I think FaZe is obviously the prime example of that, and they really have built something big. And I think this is very logical because all these people can show up in FaZe videos. I'm sure a lot of them are aware of what FaZe was even before. Question for you is, one thing that I'm seeing is I'm not seeing any gaming celebrities in this list, right? I'm not seeing, let's just say something, I'm not seeing like someone like Ninja or whoever in this list. Yeah. What do you think that that's a sign? Were they not interested? Were they not approached?
I think it's a sign that they're not necessarily needed in something like this. I think it's also a sign of how big gaming is getting. That, you know, they're now going to like just straight up mainstream, like real celebrities, you know, not esports celebrities. Well, I wanna comment on what you were talking about earlier, because I think there's a very important point to be made there. So all the things that you described are things that sports teams do. And so when you say they're not really an esports team, they're more of a media organization, whatever. Well, like all sports teams are.
Of course.
I have a lot of friends who are Mets fans, right? Like, as every Mets fan knows, you can't win the World Series every year.
Yeah.
So you have to maintain your fan base when you're not winning. You know, you it's impossible for every team to win all the time, right? And so
yes.
And so the teams that are losing have to make money somehow. And so the old model when esports started was you had a team and you would drive to a tournament and there was prize money and you'd win it and you would go home and that's how you funded your team, right? Like, I think people quickly have realized that to do esports on the scale that people want to watch it, there just like literally isn't enough prize money to go around for every team to just be able to depend on prize money.
Yes.
or even just sponsorships, right? Like, you have to be able to create your own content. You have to be able to monetize your fans. And I think all of that we just discussed earlier is a step in that direction. When you look at the type of stuff that all the teams are putting out now, especially during quarantine where there's no matches played, all the teams are super active. Like, I'm a Premier League fan, obviously, you know, you're a Ajax fan. You follow Arsenal, you follow Ajax on social media, and there's new stuff every day. And they're re-releasing content, and so they're media organizations. And I think FaZe is going in that direction as well.
Absolutely. I actually would like to challenge a little bit of what you're saying. So obviously traditional sports organizations are content companies as well, right? But the key of their business for the vast, vast majority of traditional sports teams is all local, right? It's local ticketing, it's local sponsorships, it's beverage, it's media rights.
Well, media are the biggest source of revenue.
Absolutely, but that's part, you know, that's part of a broader franchising system, right? But what I'm talking about is like the content digital sponsorship part of it is very small. People partner with the Mets, one, because they want to have the connection of being of that brand, but more specifically, they want to market New York fans. Whereas people partner up with FaZe and with Dig or whoever because they want to have global fans or national fans, right? So as a result, esports teams, like, we're always digital first. Like, the way we sell sponsorships is through our digital integration. So in that sense, what I meant to say was when it comes to FaZe, like, FaZe has kind of, they have an esports arm and that's great, but they 99% focus on the content piece, which is the vast majority of their business. It's like people, you know, like their large roster, like Ewok or others who are, you know, big, who have big followings, and they activate with them, with partners, and they tell those stories. But then the professional side, like their CS team, is very small relative to that pie. That's more of what the differentiator.
So you're saying just in terms of like the number of players they have actually competing versus the people who are Just going out and just creating content, like just being influencers and having the FaZe brand name on it. Yeah, certainly.
And their business focus.
Yeah, yeah. And FaZe has done that a lot more than, you know, there's some teams that are very competitive in nature, you know, mm-hmm. where they just do one thing and it's win titles. And then you have teams like FaZe who have figured out that you can make a lot of money just making content and getting fans, and that at some point you have to make money to be a business. So winning titles is not enough.
And one of the interesting things, and this wasn't, you know, apologies, isn't in a note I sent to you, but FaZe actually was reportedly trying to set up a loan not too long ago. And they actually switched, and now they're raising money. So that's a really interesting switch.
I
would imagine that's because of people like Jimmy Iovine, who I would imagine led this round and went to all of his celebrity friends. Is like, hey, this is interesting for you. So I just think that's surprising that, you know, a team like FaZe would do that as opposed to raise capital. But I guess it's kind of the old saying of, you know, debt cheaper than selling equity. You know, debt you can repay. Selling equity is going to be a lot more expensive once you want to get that back later. So we'll see, but it's just an interesting note. Moving on to our next story, and that's it's a really big one for kind of the partnership minded people that are listening. But BMW made a major splash in esports. The German automaker announced that it has signed global partnerships with 5 top esports organizations. They've stepped in agreements with Cloud9 in North America, Fnatic and G2 in Europe, and then FunPlus Phoenix and T1 Entertainment Sports in China and Korea specifically. These are 5 countries, obviously, and 3 continents. The main provisions of the partnerships include providing vehicles for which to travel to and from the events. That's great. I would love that with a BMW that have painted on team logos with graphics and kind of that going to the event. Heavy social media engagement and the placement of the BMW's logo on jerseys and content. So, this was first reported by Kevin Hitt of the Esports Observer. Mo, in general, you know, from coming from a partnerships background, like, what does a deal of this magnitude say to you?
It says that people are waking up to the fact that esports is a way to advertise not just to a certain demographic, but to people, right? Mm-hmm. So I think for the longest time, people were thinking, hey, I have this, you know, product that would be good for gamers, so I'm going to use esports to advertise it because I want gamers to buy it, right? People would say things like, we want to advertise to gamers, right? I think people are slowly realizing that all these gamers are people, you know, and whether or not you play Counter-Strike, you still need to drive to work. You still need to shave. You still need to, you know, you still need to buy toilet paper. And so often can use esports as a way to just target certain demographics. And it has nothing to do with the fact that they play games, and people are finally waking up to that. And so so BMW, I think, is very smart. And in general, I think the autos are very smart, because I saw this somewhere, actually. I was reading, I don't remember exactly the source, but when you look at the periods when people buy cars, it's when they get their license and when they get their first job after college. Those are like the two most like heavy car buying periods. And esports, when you look at the demographic, is perfect because it hits that, you know, that two car buying, you know, period gap very well.
Yes.
And so that makes a ton of sense to me. And then it's nice, obviously, that they've, so they've made the cars themed, and they're activating in a way that resonates with esports fans. And obviously that is great. But I think the overall biggest takeaway is that it's not a mouse. It's not a keyboard. It's not an energy drink. It's not whatever. It's a product that anyone can use.
That's great. One of the interesting things to add to what you were saying is BMW clearly is in a luxury category of cars. And why this is so interesting to me is generally marketers will market products for their immediate customers. Mm-hmm. The fact that BMW, one, considers this a worthwhile investment, that even if they're not considering this immediate customers, But you know, in the next few years, they think it's worthwhile investing. Or two, considers the esports demographic, their immediate customers, whether it's the one or the second one. It shows that the audience is skewing older than you, than kind of what the general audience thinks. Like one of the things that we see is the our audience, actually the majority of our audience is in like whatever 21 to 35 years old. A lot of people, when they think about esports outside of our world, think about it as it's skewed. They think about like 12 to 24. So that's definitely, I think, a big plus and a big sign of where esports is heading, because that's the type of audience that is especially interesting. It's the audience that is young enough where they can be loyal to a brand. Because if you're, if the first luxury car you buy is a BMW and you love it, you're probably going to be a BMW guy.
So I was just thinking about this, and I don't remember if I actually read this somewhere or if I'm completely making it up. I've seen this similar thing where it's like, if you buy luxury cars, people are very loyal to luxury cars brands. So like if they buy a Mercedes and they really like it, they're very likely to buy Mercedes again. And so what I've noticed, and you know, this may be common knowledge and I'm just behind on advertising trends, but you've seen all the luxury automakers like come out with models geared toward younger people and they're slightly cheaper. So like the on TV now, all you see is like, oh, the, you know, the cheapest Mercedes yet, like this, this, and that. And they're starting at 30 grand. And it used to be they would advertise like their flagship models and look how nice they are. And so I think they've realized that once you get people hooked on a brand, like they just keep buying. And so this this BMW deal, it makes sense because they're hitting some of the target market, but they're also hitting before the target market to kind of condition these people to want to buy BMWs. Because there is that loyalty. It's like similar to what Gillette did. So Gillette for Gillette advertises super hard to people who are like not old enough to shave or like don't need to shave that much. And they even have a thing where they like mail you a razor on your 18th birthday, like a stick on your 18th birthday. They used to do that. I don't know if they still do. I got one and I've never switched. So once people buy a razor, like they, unless it's like seriously malfunctioning, like they also tend to be very loyal. And so Gillette got into esports and did a very similar thing as what BMW is doing here.
I think it's a difference in type of marketing. When you market to a traditional sports team, generally you're marketing to a region. When you're marketing to esports, you're kind of marketing to a generation. Obviously, depending on the game. So it's much easier to create long-term fan loyalty if you're touching like an age group, right? Because then when I'm marketing, like when you go to a traditional sports event, you see something that is designed to be appealing to a 15-year-old, but also a 70-year-old, right?
As long as they live in New York, yeah.
Exactly. As long as they live in New York, as long as they live in London, wherever. With esports, like they know their, we know our audience so specifically that we can actually hyper target something that's interesting for our specific audience, but we can do that with a type of feel and competitiveness that you have in sports. So that's a really big differentiator that we have. And I think that's really powerful, and brands like BMW are seeing it. And I think that's a good sign for things to come.
The deal excluding shooters, by the way, I think is one point that we didn't really touch on, but is worth noting. It's really not surprising, and the fact that it's all shooters, not just like Counter-Strike, which has, you know, very realistic shooting, but just all shooters in general, kind of shows that there's still a lot of brands who are sensitive on this.
Yeah, when we're looking at shooters, I mean, the majority of these teams, I think the only team is, like, they all have a CSGO team.
Yeah.
The only team that has, you know, they might have PUBG, which has similar issues
with
Blood. The only game is T1 and Valorant, but I would imagine when this deal was done, Valorant wasn't a consideration at all. But I agree with you, and that's the thing also. It's very hard to monetize shooters. Especially when you're talking about blue chip brands. I think that'll change, but right now it's still very difficult, which we can talk later about your product and how you're trying to kind of change the world of shooters, but we'll get to that very soon. Moving on to our next story, the Nevada Sportsbook, and this was interesting, obviously, in an age where we didn't have sports, but Nevada Sportsbook allowed to accept bets on League of Legends, CSGO, and Overwatch. They have approved wagers for the LEC, the LCS, and the Overwatch League. Before that, they approved it for some CSGO tournaments. In a string of approvals, Nevada regulators announced Thursday evening the state's licensed sportsbook will be permitted to post and accept bets, as mentioned, on the LEC, the LCS, and Overwatch League. This Tri-Tab Esports League has been approved for the following three wager types: head-to-head, match winner, and overall winner. So this is reported by Cody Longo at Esports Insider. So how this is a big move by the Nevada Sportsbook, right? So do you think this is a sign of things to come, or do you think this is just right now a temporary solution because people want to bet on something and traditional sports is just closed for now?
I think it's going to happen. I think as long ago as, you know, a couple of years, like I was in rooms where people were talking about legalizing this stuff in various states. And the point is it's already legal elsewhere. It happens illegally everywhere. And states, I think, are realizing that they want to be able to make money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think that certainly all sports being canceled and like Nevada being totally screwed is definitely pushing them in that direction to get it done faster. But I don't think that it's the cause. I think that this is something that has been coming for a while. And I think it will eventually happen. I mean, there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to, you know, if we're able to bet on horse racing and traditional sports, there's no reason we shouldn't be able to bet on esports, right? It's just the kind of government in place that has to approve that stuff is traditionally very slow. It moves very slowly. It needs, you know, they're going to have to hire a whole bunch of consultants to explain this stuff to them. The consultants are going to go hire people who actually understand esports to be able to explain it to them because they don't know anything. And it's going to take a while, but eventually this will be legal because there's too much, like, you know, black market gambling happening and there's too much revenue that's being passed up right now.
For sure. And I think this really shows that as that it's a priority now. I think to your earlier point, this was bound to happen. I think this just really pushed it forward by a lot because they're desperate. The analysis that I've seen from Darren Heitner, who's a lawyer who focuses a lot on gambling, was that the issues primarily esports was the fact that they didn't have the kind of the infrastructure in place to find out when things were match fixed. So when you look at like
integrity, it's a huge issue.
Exactly. So when you look at the Premier League, there are companies that are doing that. We have companies in esports that are doing that as well. They aren't as reputable as the traditional sports version of it. I think this was kind of a catalyst where this was finally accepted. I think we'll see, obviously, I think we'll see Jersey take suit very quickly. I know for a fact that Jersey's looking at esports betting as something they want to make legal. I don't think they're going to be as quick, but I think they're going to follow suit. And then obviously as the rest of the country moves forward, they're going to continue to do so.
As soon as I tell anybody that we like make at Stats Helix, we make software that like deals with works with game data to do whatever, people immediately, like, I've been approached straight up, hey, you know, is there anything you guys can do for like match fixing or integrity or whatever? It's something that comes up a lot. We've had conversations with I won't name the company, but a company that provides technology for like traditional sports for betting and stuff like that. And they approached us about working with them on esports. They want to bring some of the same like integrity solutions that they have for traditional sports to esports. So there's definitely demand for that, and it's one of the biggest reasons why I think people are still shying away from legalizing.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time, but we still have steps to go, and obviously the. what I call FPL type of league, you know, third string CSGO league, match fixing scandals that happen once in a while, like, don't help us, because in traditional sports, it's tough for them to make that distinction, because if that would happen in, like, you know, whatever, the Premiership or a league below, it would be a big scandal. So definitely, it's definitely tough for them to distinguish, but hopefully we'll see that. Our last story of the day, I thought was probably, it was a, I think, a grossly underreported story in esports or general media, and that Players Network launches a celebrity gaming channel, which is backed by WME, Daylight, and Stratton Sklavos. So for those of you who think, hey, Stratton Sklavos, that sounds super familiar. He is the former investor and one of the chief executives at Equifax. Daylight and WME are two big talent management agencies, and they started to work together to announce this Players Network, which is a new gaming-focused production company that, according to their press release, will look to compete with other upstarts, angling to tap into the esports and competitive gaming's newly dominant place in the entertainment firmament. So Players Network will feature original programming, including unscripted series, celebrity gameplay, live events, tapping talents from music, traditional sports, and esports gaming world of Daylight and WME's rosters. Players Network initial squad of talent includes professional athletes De'Aaron Fox of the Sacramento Kings, Josh Hart of the New Orleans Pelicans, Jarvis Landry of the Cleveland Browns, and Alvin Kamara of the New Orleans Saints. In music and entertainment, they have Party Next Door, Murder Beats, Boy Wonder, a big producer, an actor, former athlete Donovan Carter from Ballers. And then in gaming, they have Cat Gun, Soda Popping, Cash, Jesser, Jericho, Octane, Siglis, Sony, and Denkop. So their whole plan is, you know, similar to Venn. Venn wants to be a true 24/7 channel. I think when it comes to Players Network, it's not a perfect comparison, but they are closer probably to like a BuzzFeed, where they make a bunch of content on different channels to then try to monetize, rather than creating one channel with a continuous stream of content. So we've seen quite a lot of these kind of traditional sports, entertainment, music converging with esports. What do you think of Players Network's approach to this?
I think it's a slightly different approach. I think it's kind of good that they went after the talent first. So I've seen a couple of these already, and obviously now that you've put me on the spot, I've forgotten the name of all of them. What I've seen is a lot of like gaming industry executives and like people who with like really serious gaming cred, like Mike Morhaime's working on one of them.
Yes.
You know,
Venn.
And so like serious gaming industry expertise, but kind of lacking in the like traditional media. Or definitely not as strong as this. And so it's a smart move to partner up with talent agency, because they're going to have exclusive rights to us, a lot of these really big guys. You know, Soda Poppin's one of the biggest streamers on Twitch. Interesting to see how the content itself is going to differ. So not just the distribution and like who they're using and stuff, but and then what they do to differentiate it to make sure that there's not almost like too much like saturation of like this content, because like when Drake came on a stream, it was like, oh my god, look, the celebrity's playing games. Now like every friggin' celebrity is playing games, right? So especially because of COVID, everyone's actually playing games, right? But imagine this COVID thing kind of dies down and we go back to normal. Once the novelty of like non-esports people playing video games kind of fades, what are we left with? That's my hot take for the day.
Yes. Well, that's super interesting. And to your earlier point, it's about how they differentiate themselves. Because a lot of times we see this like, oh, let's put a traditional sports celebrity with an esports celebrity. Let's try to make it happen. But it's also about how does that fit in the larger narrative? A good example, which is a personal example for us, is we had Hunter Pence work with Damante, our League of Legends streamer. Hunter is a big League of Legends fan. Damante is a big baseball fan. And it was with Verizon for a good charity. We got like 6 million views in total last week. It was really exciting.
You guys got Lily Singh too, right?
Got Lily Singh, yes. Yeah. We got her yesterday. So, but those are kind of one-offs, right? And they work because they're one-offs. if you do this every week or every few days, it's going to be completely different. So I think what we'll see, what's really interesting is like, how are they able to really create something that's truly unique rather than let's take this athlete and let's have him game. Let's take this entertainer and have him game, because you see often that you'd be surprised, but those athletes, those entertainers by themselves aren't able to drive audiences to Twitch the way Twitch person does, because they're not streaming as often. They don't have the luxury of like their audience knowing like every Tuesday.
So having a predictable streaming schedule is one of the most important, like when so for a while I entertained the idea of trying to grow a fan base on Twitch, not like to become a huge celebrity, but I wonder how many followers I can get if I like actually try to do this, right? And so I would stream and people would be like, oh, you streamed? Oh, I would have watched, but I was busy. Like, you have to let me know next time. You know, it's such an important part of getting people to watch you is just having a schedule.
Yes.
And being on at predictable times. And like, and so none of these, like, none of these basketball real players can really like compete with the dedicated streamers.
Well, and also this idea of like, there are even some athletes that are streaming a lot. A good example at the top of my head is Demetrius Johnson. Mm-hmm. He's like a big MMA star. He's very known in the streaming community because he streams like 3-4 times a week for hours. But his numbers are that of a, you know, above average streamer. Not like a superstar, right? And this is a guy who has millions of followers on his different social platforms. So T-Pain is a good example, or whoever, but like they don't always translate that well. So that's the key challenge. And to your earlier point, like often we see like kind of a schism, right? And often we see like either a organization that's heavily driven by traditional media that knows how to create interesting traditional media, but doesn't have the kind of gaming Twitch expertise, or we see the other way. We see like this is all Twitch, but this is not enough like traditional entertainment experience to kind of merge it together. Then, for instance, I think is a really good middle ground. I don't know about Players Network just because I don't know their full staff or who they're working with. So I'm really excited to follow it. I think it has a lot of potential, but it's all about execution at this point. Just having big stars the way that works on traditional TV is not enough in esports.
I'm positive on this overall trend because it's just going more mainstream and attracting more eyeballs in general and getting more people into gaming. But I really do hope it doesn't turn into the guy with the cat on his head effect, which if you've walked around Union Square, I'm sure at some point you've seen there's a guy who has a cat on his head, and the first time you see him, you're like, wow, there's a guy with a cat on his head. And then after that, you're like, oh, whatever, I've seen it before. So it's like, you know, the first time I saw Josh Hart playing video games, I was like, wow, it's Josh Hart playing video games. You know, and after that, I was like, oh, yeah, he plays. I play. We all play.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So we'll see how things go. But definitely, especially in this COVID time, a really interesting announcement right now.
Yeah, for sure.
They had a stream the other day. I'll follow up next week with our audience with kind of the viewership on that. But it's an interesting endeavor to follow. Moving away from the news of esports and moving into your background and some of the stuff you're doing at Stats Helix. Yeah, I would love for our audience that isn't familiar with you and kind of your background and what has brought you to Stats Helix to kind of walk through your esports story and what eventually brought you at Stats Helix.
So my esports story started with StarCraft. I used to play StarCraft 1 for fun. StarCraft 2 came out, started playing it, and then got invited by a friend of mine to play some, you know, one-on-one with some friends of his. Quickly realized that there was a lot of people that were better than me, and then I started trying to get better, and quickly realized that unlike traditional games where it's like Mario, I could just play the game and beat it, and then I'm done. No matter how hard I practice or how much time I spent, there's always someone better than me at StarCraft, right? Yes. And so that's when I said, okay, I need to get better. And so I started watching and realized that there's pros who get paid to do this and started watching them and learning their strategies. And that's kind of how I got sucked into esports. I left banking to start my own esports startup a few years ago. And, you know, because I realized that all the things needed for esports to grow and mature were there. Like, gaming was starting to become a little bit more mainstream. The internet was huge. So everybody had access to broadband internet and was able to play online with other people. It got to a point where I figured, okay, this is now enough that it can take off, and it's something that I really love. So I jumped into gaming from my finance background. Through that, I started trying to meet people. So naturally, the first thing I did was, you know, try to meet people in New York. And so one of the first people I met was Maurice. So thanks for having me here. And then I started building this networking group that you're familiar with, and met a lot of people through that. Ended up being connected with Dana from Flipside Tactics. I'm actually wearing my Flipside jersey right now, just in case you had the video on. And then so I worked with them as an advisor for a while, helping them out with, you know, non esports related stuff, you know, the typical like running a business kind of stuff. And then from there, you know, they at the time they were working on Stats Helix in the background as a solution for helping players get better and for scouting players on the cheap. So they wanted to pivot that because they saw a much bigger potential for the core technology. To turn into products for enhancing broadcasts for millions of people instead of for a few esports teams, you know, improving scouting. And that's kind of where Stats Helix became the bigger opportunity. And we all just kind of focused on that. So I ended up joining full time. And that's kind of where my promotion kicked in. So I'm now the COO of Stats Helix, and together with the rest of the team, we're building some really cool stuff.
Awesome. That's great to hear. And kind of meetups and bringing people together is really one of the highlights. And we should definitely try to do something in the COVID era as well.
I have something planned.
Okay.
I need a couple of people to get back to me, but my goal is to have another meetup on like Zoom or some kind of video conferencing where we can have speakers and have people be able to raise their hands and ask questions and things like that.
Awesome. I think we definitely got to bring that back. They're just really helpful. But moving on to Stats Helix.
Yep.
You kind of teased a little bit about how it has to do with broadcasting and enhancing the broadcasting.
Yep.
But from a top level perspective, walk us through Stats Helix and some of your core products.
Absolutely, I can do that. So when you watch a stream, you're essentially seeing player view, right? You're seeing what the player sees, and that's not how sports are watched. That's not how really anything is watched. But it's how esports is watched. And information that's relevant to the player is not necessarily relevant to the audience, and vice versa. So what we're doing at Stats Helix is we want to provide people who are watching streams with more information and enhance the broadcast so they can see stuff that they can't normally see. So I'll give you an example. When you're watching football, they have the yellow first down line, right? That gives you context. It lets you know if a play was good or not because you can tell how far they got relative to where that line is. Without context, it's very hard to know if that was a good play. Well, in esports, you know, when you watch some broadcast, let's say when you watch OWL, sometimes there's a lot happening on the screen and everything you're watching is from a player's perspective, and you kind of want to go, okay, well, that guy is here and he's holding, he's holding that angle with an op, right? But what's happening elsewhere on the mat? I have no idea. And so you can't tell, you know, if the terrorists are starting to rotate to B, you know, you can't tell until the caster tells you, okay, they're starting to rotate to B, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're missing that information. What we do at Stats Helix is provide visualizations of that kind of information. So one of the things that we have is this map that shows you at all points where all the players are, and it runs in a Twitch extension, so that you, the viewer at home, you know, don't have to wait for a caster to tell you there's a rotation happening. You can just see where all the players are. we also allow you to look at the scoreboard whenever you want, because, you know, you should be able to do that. It's kind of some of these things that, like, if you were in the game spectating, you could get, but like as a viewer on Twitch, you're basically at the mercy of the broadcaster.
So you want to bring the power back to the viewer, so to say.
Yeah, give the viewers flexibility over how they consume it, you know, let them focus on things that are interesting to them. So like if you've just tuned into a game and you have, you know, you go, oh, you know, how simple playing today, I love simple, I only care about simple, right? You'd have to wait like half an hour until somebody says like a fun fact about simple to get your fix. Whereas yes, with the visualizations that we create, you know, you could just click on Simple's name and see how he's doing.
And just to add to that, I think that's super interesting, because that's, I think, where media should be going to, right? Where esports, or in general, has taken kind of the traditional sports approach of, let's create this one stream package that greatly mirrors that of traditional sports, which is, you know, you, in traditional sports, you're limited to TV, so there's only so much you can do, right? You can only focus on one stream of content at one time. What you're doing, and what I think the future is make it an experience that is customizable and interactive for the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Not everybody has to watch the same thing. So another one of our products, I'll give you an example because it does something slightly differently, but it's for the same reason. So we have something called a highlight wizard, which it automatically captures highlights. When you watch a broadcast right now, you're essentially at the mercy of the delay observer. So there's a broadcast will have one guy, you know, viewing it in real time, and then there's one guy who's watching on a 3-second delay or 5-second delay or whatever they choose to be able to find things and then observe them so that they can show the viewers that thing that happened, right? And so that person can only be in one place at a time. Esports matches have 10 players, you know, minimum, doing things all over the map. And so what we can do, because we have game data and we have technology, is we can automatically capture every player's perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And then feed it to the production using bits of game data. So whenever somebody gets a kill, we capture it automatically and we send it. And so the guy who's doing the replays or the highlights, all he has to do is click on, you know, a couple of things. Hey, this guy killed this guy killed that guy. Just click on what he wants to show, press play, and he shows it. And he can show new things to the audience that weren't in the original broadcast. So right now when they show a highlight, it's just what you just saw 10 seconds ago. You're just seeing it again. Yes. Whereas with this tech, you're able to show stuff that wasn't even observed, right? It's like if at a sports event, the way they do highlights is there's 100 cameramen everywhere and they're just filming everything all the time, right? Well, we can do that digitally with zero cameramen.
Got it. That's really, really awesome. So right now the products that you're kind of referring to are the tournament organizers, the publishers that are streaming tournaments, right? But you know, one of the products, I think you touched on it a little bit, the Hero Helper, I think has interesting approaches that have interesting integrations that go beyond just your general esports feed.
Yeah, so our goal is not to be, you know, specific to esports. It's just stream watchers in general, right? So I don't know if you've ever watched your favorite streamer and you come in and he's just explained something and you weren't there and you asked the question. So, and everyone in chat goes, he just said this. And you're like, well, I just got here. So for stuff like that, or Valorant is a great example, right? There's all these new... there's all these new heroes that nobody knows what they do. And so if you've just tuned in and the guy's playing a character and you go, hey, what does this hero do? I have no idea. You know, he might have just explained it and you've just missed it. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is the same kind of visualizations. We can just put on the screen using the game data to figure out what hero he's playing and then just sending to the Twitch extension hey, he's playing this character. He has this character has the following abilities, and you can even, you know, preview, play a little video clip. You know how Riot has those ability clips in League. So we could just put those in the Twitch extension for people to see. Oh, okay, cool. Now I know what this guy does, and I can follow the stream. It's just things that we think are common sense. And they keep people watching the stream as opposed to having to leave to like do research and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that way that person can keep watching. They don't have to open a separate tab and like go Google, you know, what does this hero do?
I think that's super, super helpful. And we talked about this, but personally, I think that's the way to go for publishers that are releasing a new game, right? You're already paying, like you're already either paying or convincing mm-hmm. top streamers to play your game. Like imagine if we had the Valorant stream.
Absolutely.
Rather than you know, when everything went on launch, rather than having like the streamer have to explain things all the time, you just have a feed that explains what Sage does or what Phoenix does.
Yeah,
that's going to make that experience so much easier.
It's game publishers are paying streamers so much money to stream these games. It's the new advertising, right? When's the last time you saw a billboard for Call of Duty? Like mm-hmm. it's people don't do that anymore. It's all paying streamers. And so if you're paying seven figures to streamers, you know, it makes sense to get a piece of software that enables this for everyone who's streaming your game. It's I don't know if I ever mentioned this, but we're a B2B company. So the way that it would work is like, publisher would buy our product and then anyone streaming that game would just have access to it.
When you look at Stats Helix in specifically or live streaming in general, where do you see the trends heading for those that aren't on Twitch every single day? Where do you see it grow?
So what do you mean by for those who aren't on Twitch every day? You mean
what I mean to say is like more from a general perspective as like the live stream consumption. So
yeah,
not just hyper focused on Twitch, which is the market leader, but more in mm-hmm. general as how it's to be.
Okay. So one thing that we're going towards is interactivity. So two things. One, not everybody needs to watch the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's something that we already kind of addressed, but two, interactivity. So being able to interact with the stream, being able to click on things, being able to transact. We have a joint product with a company called Genvid in Counter-Strike. Mm-hmm. So it's for the last few Counter-Strike majors, this functionality has been on the stream. If you sign up, we have functionality, called cheering, where if you like a certain player or if they're doing well or whatever, you can cheer for them. And when you cheer, everyone who is watching the stream will see that that person is being cheered for. So like depending on how many people are cheering, it'll do an animation around that player. And it shows you kind of like who's hot and like who people care about at any given time. We're also monetizing that cheering. So people can pay Twitch bits to cheer more, if you will. And so it's that kind of interactivity where the fans, like if I do something, the other fans watching can see it, right? Obviously we wouldn't do anything that would interfere with the gameplay because, you know, you don't want to mess up competitive integrity. But there's also applications of it for like individual streamers where it's not a competitive match where you could do stuff like that, on purpose. So there's, I forget what it's called, but there's like that. There's that extension where somebody will be playing a game, and then like streamers can control what happens to them in the game. And I think we're going towards that for the non-competitive settings, where it's kind of more fun because you get to be involved, and it's something that traditional media can't do, and that, you know, esports and gaming and Twitch can do it very well. And then the last thing is all these functionalities are gonna come to all the platforms. Everyone's going to have this because it's going to be such a differentiator for the ones that do. You know, everyone's working on this kind of stuff. So Twitch has the extension platform, but I mean, you know, Mixer's already got technology. The other ones are all working on it as well.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, is going to be super helpful for our audience that kind of wants to understand where things are heading. So for those that are listening to the podcast that now understand your vision, and a vision that I very much agree with as far as like where live streaming is heading, how Stats Helix is positioned to take advantage of it, and they want to know more about Stats Helix, what's the best way to do that?
So if you want to learn more about Stats Helix, you can go to our website, statshelix.com, or you can follow us on social media. So on Twitter, we're at Stats Helix. And then the rest of the team and I have been actually sharing a lot of our viewpoints on Medium. So we've put out a few Medium articles that tackle how we look at the industry. I wrote a very long piece on the role of third-party software developers like Stats Helix in esports and gaming. So on Medium, we're also just Stats Helix. You can find us.
Great. I'll make sure to put all of those social medias in the description box. And if people want to follow you, how do they do that?
So on Twitter, I'm at ElectronicMo, all one word. And then if you want to get in touch with me, it's just mo@statshelix.com.
And be sure, if you're based in New York City, once COVID is over, Mo has a really awesome band that's performing live.
you'll have to come by and actually come to one of our shows.
I want to. I saw your tweeting constantly, or on Facebook, like we're going live, and then I was like, oh, I should go sometime. And then
we were supposed to play at Pianos, and then COVID happened.
Well, hopefully, you know, next time, once we get through this, I think all of us are going to be a lot more social. So
yeah.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for joining. As always, it's a great pleasure. And, you know, I'm already looking forward to the next one, because I'm sure you'll come back.
Thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, this was another episode of Esports Boom, your weekly esports podcast, and we'll see you next week.